The modern day UFO ET phenomenon is nothing more, nothing less than the re-emergence of the Nephilim, the fallen angels. That, according to my guest, documentary filmmaker Ali Siadatan, whose film UFOs, Angels and Gods is available for your screening at thinkagainproductions.com. Rick writes, I think this guy is all wet. To begin with, all the holy books, he quotes, were written by men, not God. So how do we know how much of it is true and how much of it was just written to pacify and or control the masses? In addition, if his contention is that modern-day aliens are not aliens but demons or the re-emergence of the Nephilim, then, with due respect, why do they need ships to fly around in? Why not just use their wings or spirit beings? Why the metal enclosures? I'll put that question to Ali Siadatan when we return. I just want to draw your attention very quickly to a special event that I'm hosting here in Toronto on Sunday, April the 17th. It's called the Bilderbergs. Let me ask you, do you believe that presidents are elected or selected? If you think it's the latter, you may be interested in attending the Bilderberg, Sunday, April the 17th. I'll be bringing Daniel Estulin, Pulitzer Prize nominee, investigative journalist, and author of The True Story of the Bilderbergs. He'll be in Toronto at the University of Toronto, Sunday, April 17th. For more information, just log on to strangeplanet.ca. Go to the live events page. You can order tickets right there as well, strangeplanet.ca. Back to more of my conversation with Ali Siadatan, UFOs, Angels, and Gods, when Coast to Coast AM continues right after this. Welcome back to Coast AM. Ali Siadatan, documentary filmmaker, thinkagainproductions.com, and there you can view the documentary film UFOs, Angels, and Gods. And Ali, just before we go to the phones, you heard me read that email from Rick going into the break.
Yeah.
I'm guessing we're going to get a lot of that sort of sentiment on the phones, because let's be frank, this position, putting the UFO ET phenomenon through a biblical lens, is not a popular position to hold. Would you agree with that?
Well, there was a time where the word Nephilim, people wouldn't even know what that word meant. Today, I can see that since the middle of the 90s, where I got involved in looking into this thing till today, the awareness has grown tremendously. So I do feel that God is kind of pulling off a veil and saying, this is actually bringing so much information from the Bible to life. And this is part of this very special time we live in. Now, to answer the gentleman's questions, the two questions he asked, the first question about these books have been written to pacify people, that is a Marxist perspective. However, it doesn't add up to the facts, because the body of knowledge that is these codes of civilization, they are so complex that they couldn't have just been written by a bunch of guys or one smart guy. They are very complex, and they've been they've given us the codes of civilization that has created the world that we still live in. They've given us worldview. It's clear that the story of the Bible talks about real countries and real people and involves these other beings. It is true that all the ancestors have spoken of these other beings, but the Bible gives us identity. Says this is who they are, this is what we're living in, and is the only one of these books that tells the future before it happens. It's not just a codes of law or a system of spiritual awakening. Now, this is too complex, so I don't agree that these appeared by and were written by men to pacify. I think it's a blanket statement, but when you read
what about the contention that, you know, if these are demons, why do they bother flying around? Why do they need metal enclosures? Why don't they just, you know,
And the reason for that is because we are coming at it with two preconceived notions that we have inherited. One, the idea that we've inherited from the church, perhaps it goes back to the Gnostic period where everything gets spiritualized, to the idea of how do you explain flight? Well, you put birds' wings on them in these paintings. That is kind of these placeholders. But now that we're there and we're living the second coming and these two worlds are colliding like never before in a major way, the Earth is the center of a very important event in the universe right now. Now that we're seeing them for the way they are, we don't need the placeholders anymore. So the Bible clearly talks about chariots and talks about prophets being taken from one place to another, like Ezekiel is brought from Babylon to Jerusalem to look at the temple, or Elijah is taken up in a chariot of fire. So this idea that coming with these preconceived ideas were perhaps the angels were always like this. They were always traveling through the ocean of space the way that we travel through the oceans of earth, and we are all the children of Elohim, including us. So it's a preconceived notion that we're bringing, saying, oh, no, these were the placeholders as far as the ghosts, or they are bird-like creatures. There are spirits in the Bible that the Lord is an exorcist. He calls out spirits from people and frees them, but that is a different order of being, the energetic beings. We are talking here about the story of the race of the Elohim with God in their midst in the universe, the fallen angels, us, and a multitude of other beings, billions, I suspect. And this is a phenomenal story, and it's real, and it's happening right now in the Middle East. The story that we find ourselves in doesn't have to happen in those preconceived placeholder perspectives of ghosts or bird-like wings. This may have been always the way the angels traveled. So to dismiss all of this heritage and knowledge and not look into it, but come up with a kind of a man-made idea and fall into the trap, oh, they're aliens and they've just arrived. There's a heritage here that gives us light.
Well, now, if we were wrong about, or if we've misinterpreted the idea that fallen angels are just spiritual beings, isn't it also possible then that we're wrong about, you know, where they come from? And isn't it not then possible that they do come from distant galaxies? So they are physical beings who are, in fact, extraterrestrials.
Well, yes. It all depends on whether you believe the universe is old or young at the heart of it. If you believe the universe is very young and it's a holograph, then your focus naturally goes to another dimension that you consider to be some energy dimension. It's a very, you know, it's again a placeholder, because the universe's time and space are beyond our understanding yet. We can't assume we've got it. But that's the natural conclusion of the young universe. If you go with an old universe, it has a tail. Satan is called the ancient devil, the ancient serpent. So he's ancient, even from God's perspective, and that's why he's collected so much information. So if you look at it from that point of view, it's true, the story can unfold in the universe. My perspective is that, not to put it in the box, the universe obviously is something I will not dismiss because it is vast. God operating through the laws of his own creation out of choice is, at the end, the laws of his own creation. It is magnificent, we are to understand, and if these beings understand them better and can manipulate them, that certainly makes them wiser than us, because we are newcomers and we're learning. So it's possible that the story is there are many heavens, but there's a light realm. I don't know. We can't assume that we have one perspective that fits it all. But to say that God and his angels operate in the physical universe, it agrees with the story of the Gospels, where God eats on the shores of Galilee and travels on boats and donkeys. And to say that he's kind of isolated in that 2,000 years ago world, he cannot stand among his chariots now in the 21st century. No, if he does that somehow, he must always wear that clothing, that fisherman's clothing or that rabbi from Jerusalem clothing. We kind of look at him encapsulated in this vision. So yes, I think that there's a lot of tradition that has become to us in our thinking, but the Bible does talk about real beings in the universe involved with the power structures and ideas that have shaped human world and history.
Okay, let me jump in here and grab some calls, because they are lining up as we speak. Elaine is on the wildcard line, and she's joining us from Fort Myers, Florida this morning. Welcome to Coast, Elaine.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen. What I've been wondering for a long time is that what is the source of racism? And maybe it's that the original people on the earth were black, or some form of black, and that the Nordic looking extraterrestrials came down and seeded, so the blonde haired, blue eyed ones came down and put their DNA down in here and said that. And said, well, we're superior. We want you all to look like us and blonde hair, blue eyes and all that. And that's how racism came back, you know, to this planet.
All right, Elaine, thanks for that. Allie, you want to weigh in on that one?
Yeah, it's a great evil. I mean, there's a darkness in people's hearts. And where does it come from? I don't know, but it's definitely a darkness of people's hearts. It's the lack of love, and it's very small-minded. When you look at history, whites have enslaved whites more often than blacks have been enslaved, as far as slavery is concerned. But when it comes to racism, between the skin colors and the idea of a master race, yeah, definitely I think there's something very dark about these ideas, and they lack love, but I don't know what their source is.
All right, Chuck is on the east of the Rockies line, calling from Antwerp, Ohio. Hi, Chuck. Welcome to Coast.
Hey, Richard. Ollie. Hey, great Coast. It was a fascinating topic.
Thank you.
You know, I've thought about this stuff for a long time, and I've done some considerable studying, like into the Nephilim. And I go back to the meeting on Mount Hermon. And a pact was entered into, and before these angels did their great transgression, they entered into a pact. And that transgression was they left their first estate for their intended purpose. And what they did was take God's creation and they hybridized it or bastardized it, if you can use that word. But, and Jesus, he pointed them out in the Bible. But what I was wanting to know was these first generation hybrids have physical characteristics. You know, you'd see them and you'd go, giant! You'd be screaming giant, you know. I just wondered after successive generations if these physical traits were diluted out, where you really couldn't tell the difference. At one time, we were talking about six fingers, six toes, double rows of teeth to, okay, those genetic expressions have been diluted out. Today, they look like common men.
That's a great point, Chuck. I mean, Allie, why do we not have giants today? Why did the hybridization of the Nephilim and humans manifest itself as giants?
Well, presumably because their dads were bigger and different creatures than humans, and somehow their genes led to these creations of giants. What happened to them? Well, there's a lot of killing of the giants in the Bible. Like Joshua and Caleb, when the 40 years of wandering are done in the desert and the new generation is going into the Holy Land, there Joshua and Caleb pursue the Nephilim and kill them. And what my friend Elie Marzulli has discovered is that many of them escape the Middle East and they go over the Bering Straits and come into the Americas, where he is discovering their bones. And it's fascinating. So there is this killing of the Nephilim that's happened in before the flood as well. They were killed. God has put the spirit of mutual destruction in their hearts, and they killed each other. And the angels were arrested and put in prison, as your caller was saying, that Jesus visits.
But why no giants today? This hybrid program is not producing giants now. Why not?
No, because the purpose this time is perfect infiltration, and that is what's unique about it, and now we're seeing they're infiltrating us. So the purpose is different. Their purpose is to be like one of us, and since they have telepathy, perhaps when the signal is given, the Bible talks about a lie, that those who don't believe the truth are going to believe in a lie, perhaps the lies that the saviors of the world have arrived. And perhaps telepathy will have a role in communicating that to people, and perhaps it already has a role.
So, all right, let's go west of the Rockies. Wayne is in Tacoma, Washington. Good morning, Wayne. Welcome to Coast.
Good evening, gentlemen. Allie, I've got three things to transmit to you. Do it as quickly as possible. First of all, have you read the book by Colonel Philip Corso, The Day After Roswell?
No.
That's one you need to read, because it's the government official that was put in charge of the Roswell artifacts and he tells the whole true story about the Roswell and taking the things to government. Next is, have you come across in the Bible, in the book of Job, where Job tells where all good things come from, and good would be things from God? He makes it very clear it comes from the Pleiades. Now, the Pleiades is a group of stars that are 200 million miles away, 200 million light years away, excuse me, 200 million light years away. And then in the book of Daniel, and when Daniel's praying, from the first of his prayer to where the angel Gabriel interrupts him, it's approximately 4 minutes. So we've got time and distance. And I divided that out, and you would not believe the speed at which Gabriel traveled. It works out to be 4,000 warp, or 4,000 times the speed of light.
Now, forgive me, but I'm not familiar with the Pleiades being mentioned in the book of Job.
Oh, yeah. Both Pleiades and Orion are mentioned in Job.
Yes, right. He's right.
I'll take your word for it. Okay.
The Orion is mentioned, Pleiades is mentioned, also in the book of Amos. And the ancient Jews had a cosmology, they say the Maseroth, the constellations. So definitely the Bible points to the physical universe and even points out constellations of stars. There are this idea that some of these aliens say, I'm from the Pleiades and I've come. It's interesting your calculations, how long it would take Daniel to receive that message, that angel to fly from God to Daniel. I'm not sure what you're getting at. Are you saying that these beings, I don't know what you're getting at.
What I'm transmitting is Gabriel was in the presence of God in heaven, in the Pleiades, whether it's in our realm of reality or in another dimension. I don't know, since there's supposedly 11 dimensions, but either way, I'm taught to read the Bible as realistically as possible, wherever possible.
So, Wayne, is the suggestion here that in Job, it is being pinpointed the location of heaven is in the Pleiades constellation?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. The Pleiades constellation has three distinct stars that are sometimes called the Three Kings. And they're very bright. They're very interesting to look at. As far as, is it the location of the throne room of the universe, or the center of time and space? I don't know. Obviously, somewhere out there, there is perhaps the throne room of the universe. And it's possible that the Lord travels through time and space at speeds like that he's mentioning, and travels between matter and energy, or is in matter because he was resurrected as a physical being and made a point of that. And the story happens through process. I mean, you look at the story of Daniel being visited by this angel who brings a message of scriptural importance, and I find that passage very ironic because the tale of what that angel undergoes to see us itself becomes a very important scriptural point. He arrives and he says that the prince of Persia withstood me for 21 days. And I had to call Michael to come and, fight with the Prince of Persia.
Absolutely.
So that I can come and give this message.
All right. Well, listen, I've got to jump in here. We've got the music percolating up, which means it's time for a break. When we come back, we'll address that. Ali Siadatan, thinkagainproductions.com, the documentary film in question, UFOs, Angels, and Gods. Stay with us here on Coast to Coast AM. That's a good one from The Faces. Rod Stewart and company, I'm losing you. One of the best descriptions of The Faces comes from Paste Magazine. They write, everything you ever wanted to believe about rock and roll is true, and here's proof. Five of the scrawniest, scraggliest moppets in all the kingdom scraped themselves up off the pub floor, climbed on stage, and created magic. That would be The Faces, indeed. We will come back in mere moments and continue our conversation with Ali Siadatan, documentary filmmaker, thinkagainproductions.com. Check it out. The documentary is UFOs, Angels, and Gods, plus more of your calls when Coast to Coast AM continues right after this. Welcome back to Coast, Richard Serrett coming to you live from Coast Toronto Affiliate Talk Radio AM 640. Ali Siadatan is with us, documentary filmmaker. Before the break, we had Wayne in Tacoma, Ali, mentioning that in the book of Job, the Pleiadian constellation is mentioned, saying that all good things come from the Pleiadians. Now, very famous supposed alien contactee, Billy Meyer, talks about these entities coming from the Pleiadian constellation, which would tend to suggest that perhaps, well, what does it suggest that these are angels that Meyer is in contact with, or are in fact these aliens coming from the Pleiadians, a force for good? I mean, what do you make of that?
Well, in order to understand what is a person, a force for good or a force for evil, you have to kind of look at their message. What are they trying to say? Test them, ask them. Now, from our perspective, obviously, do they know the kingship of the Lord over all of them? Who do they say he is? And what is their message? Does it jive with what God is saying? So, it is forbidden for anyone to be a prophet to other gods, at least in the laws of the God of Israel. In the Torah, in the book of Deuteronomy, he forbids his people to act as prophets for other Elohim, which means that they do have mouthpieces. It is forbidden to be one of their mouthpieces. So I think by looking at the message, we understand. If the message is saying, yes, this is the Son of God, and he is what the Bible says he is, if the message is saying that, then I would have to say it's an angel of God. If the message is one where it preaches relative goodness, an alternative ego-based way of being enlightened and good, and it's all going to be fine, we're going to take care of you, then I'm suspicious of it. However, I do think that now that we're here and we're seeing that these hybrids are being created through the agency of spaceships, I would assume that the Nephilim of old were also created in the same way. And if we were living in the time of any of these past Nephilim-creating experiments that happened before the flood and afterwards, we would also see the same spaceships, that these are not just of the modern era, that this has been the clothing of this world. Now, to what extent is it also the clothing of the angelic world? And is God and his guys on a whole other, scale? And how many layers of power and principalities are there? I don't know. But I do see that in the book of Daniel, the angel that God sends and the fallen angel that is behind the kingdom of Persia have to have powers that are fairly matched for them to fight for 21 days. If one of them is dealing in the natural world and the other is coming armed with the power of magic, then you think he can just doesn't need to call for backup. There must be something about these guys where the story is possible. God arrives with his chariots, with his armada to deliver judgment, like it says in Isaiah 66. And he's among his Merkabites, chariots, it says. Well, these guys also have these chariots. Now a war is even possible. A confrontation is possible. The Son of David can land on the Mount of Olives in Jerusalem, very close to where his tribe is from, Bethlehem. And he has these people with him. And it's possible that the story has always happened in this clothing, so I don't really see a contradiction. It bumps into our preconceived notions that we have inherited through the church's placeholders as we were looking into this world of the angels and God and the universe. And we've only just understood that you can leave the earth since the Russians threw Sputnik up in the air. That changed our perspective. This is new. Humans are learning about reality.
I've seen, and you've probably seen it too, NASA footage, which appears to show one UFO firing some sort of a weapon on another. Are we witnessing angelic wars in the heavens?
Yes, that could be one interpretation. Perhaps that's why those UFO crashes are shot down. There is perhaps this war that's this concrete. They create genetic stuff out of our genes. God sends an angel. He's in a confrontation with 21 days. One of the guys who is behind Persia. And I saw a ship go into the deserts of Iran. How long has that base been there? How long has that been going on? Is that something that just happens in the last 50 years?
Indeed. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Wildcard Line. Keith is in Dallas, Texas. Good morning, Keith. Welcome to Coast.
Yeah, good morning, and thanks for taking my call. My question for the guest is about the timeline of when all of these things are going to come to pass and when we're really going to see, I guess, a global government that is entirely under that control. And, you know, a lot of people have said, well, it's going to happen very soon. I personally don't think that the technology that is needed to wield that level of control, that we're going to see that on a mass scale until late in the 21st century. And so I was just curious as to what your guest thinks about that, or if he had an idea of what that timeline would be, you know, aside from that one part of the scripture that says you will not know the day or the time. But, you know, I would like to know what your guest thinks personally.
Great question, Keith. Go ahead, Allie.
I think that, yes, I think, Keith, you're right that we don't want to speculate on the exact time because only the Father knows the exact time. But having said that, if we just want to have fun and think about it, well, there are different ways we can look at it. The abductees are telling us that these hubrids that they're helping integrate into human society would now be in their early 30s and late 20s. So if there's an organic integration, then they have to grow up in order to come to places of great influence that have to be older. That's one way you can look at it. Another way of looking at it is the Middle East. If it's true that the timeline, you know, God says, okay, there's all of these things happening on the earth. However, I'm going to pick one small region, one small country, and when you see these particular things happen at the epicenter of you know, the cradle of civilization, then know that my coming is near. So that's another way you can look at it, is look for specific landmarks in the Middle East that involve Israel, such as them signing a covenant, a deal with the nation, some sort of a peace treaty, perhaps, people say. Look at it at the rise of a power that will conquer that region, including for a brief time, even Jerusalem. So look for events. That's another window into it. But as far as how far are we from it, do I personally think? I think we're close. I think we're very close, and I think that it's going to happen in our lifetime. Now, people have been saying that for a while. I understand. But me personally, where I stand, I'm yet one more of those people, I think.
All right, Keith, thank you for that. Allie, let me ask you this then. The UFO community is anticipating some form of disclosure. They're pressuring governments for disclosure. Do you think then there is a connection between a disclosure announcement and the arrival on the global stage of the Antichrist?
Well, I think so. I think I'm very curious to see how it's going to happen. Is it going to happen really in the alien clothing, where the deception with the fallen angel will really play the alien card till the end in a massive level? But the Muslim world, which is much more religious, would prefer a figure who is spiritual, not alien, and is of that world of the traditional way of looking at angels and demons. So I think that it's hard to tell how it's going to come down, or is it that different civilizations will see it differently? Another issue is with the concept of world. When the word world is used in the Bible, does it mean the world of the prophet, which was mainly the Middle East, or does it mean the global world as we now understand the earth? Is the Bible talking about Australia and Zimbabwe and Brazil, or is the Bible talking about specific tribes and nations around the surrounding Jerusalem and from the point of view of the prophet's world? These are questions. Could it be a local power structure? But there are specific things he does. He does miracles. He makes fire come from the sky. There are these two witnesses who stand in Jerusalem who are laid down for the world to see, I imagine, through TV now, and they rise back to life. This is going to be a very interesting time. What is the clothing going to be, and is this disclosure pushing part of it? It's possible.
All right, let's go to the first-time caller line. Elizabeth is checking in from Idaho this morning. Good morning, Elizabeth. Welcome to Coast.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. So
my
I have
pleasure.
A couple points I wanted to touch on, and it's a little complicated, and I'll try to get through this quickly, but it's not easy. You might have to do further research after I discuss a couple of things here. But you touched on love, and I really think that's the crux of it all. We're at a point where, you know, we've heard this time and time again, where technology has surpassed spirituality. And I really think that's the crux of everything, and the point being to integrate the light with the dark. And I'll tell you what, I'm kind of familiar with this. I started researching past lives, and I got involved with my own research on my own past lives, in addition to doing other people. And I knew I had a connection to the Essenes. And so I had an Akashic record reading done by the well-known Kevin Ryerson. And I came to find out that one of my past lives was first cousin to Mary Magdalene. And that would have been Mary Helena Salome. And I knew that connection was going to come up. And so as I started researching history more and more and seeing the connection between the Essenes being messengers for the archangels, according to the Dead Sea Scrolls, I just had this really strong intuition that we weren't just the messengers, we were the archangels. And in the reading, I also was able to find out that the soul group that I'm attached to is Archangel Michael and Raphael. So there's that angel connection. But I'm not very convinced that it's necessarily angels that, you know, fly in the sky that people typically associate angels with wings. I'm really beginning to think, like what you are saying, that it is off-planet. And when you look at what the Essenes did and the messages that we passed through, it was basically balance. It was love. It was compassion. It was forgiveness. And it's the very reason why the Romans chased us out of there. It's the very reason why they went after Jesus, because it destroyed their whole idea of a patriarchal society, which is where we're at right now. We have that imbalance, which, you know, there's that constant tug and pull. And so I wanted to ask you, Ali, if you've heard of this, have you ever heard of the Grand Experiment or the Great Experiment, the Polarity Integration Game? Have you heard that before?
No, I haven't.
Okay. What it is, this is according to Jalayla Starr, and I don't know if you're familiar with her information, but she's an intuitive, and she talks about a polarity integration game, and she basically states that each species will have a blueprint created in the grand experiment by their star-seeded children to resolve any conflict, no matter how ancient. And the point being is to integrate the light and the dark. And if you go back to the time of Jesus, when Jesus hung on the cross, what did they tell you? He died for your sins. But did anybody ever explain to you how he actually died for your sins? How did he physically die for your sins? And I think what happened is, while hanging on the cross, through love, forgiveness, and compassion, I believe he had a kundalini. And when you have a kundalini, what you're doing is creating an energetic template. And we kind of understand this through the research of Institute of HeartMath. If you look at, I'm just trying to connect dots for you, and other areas to look at where you can see this kind of coming together. So I'm left with the impression that this whole purpose down here on Earth is an experiment. The reason why the Bible knows everything that's going on is because this is the third time around. So people will associate this with Atlantis and Lemuria.
Okay, Elizabeth, because we're short on time, I'm going to get Ali to respond to that quickly, and then we'll move on. But I thank you for that if you want to take the answer off the air. Ali, do you want to weigh in on this one?
Well, I think that we are definitely part of a larger story, and I think that these beings we're seeing around us, these hybrids being created and this dark tale, must be taken with a grain of salt, that the armies of God and the forces of good are far greater than these guys, and these guys are surrounded, and all is well, and the Nephilim lose, going back to the time of the flood, all the way through history, and again they will lose, because it says that they shall mingle their seeds with the seed of men, but it shall not adhere. It shall not adhere. So we are headed to better times, and apparently humans are destined to become the royal priesthood, whatever that means, to live in the heavenly Jerusalem in the presence of God and to judge over the angels and the creation. So the earth is the incubation chamber, the birthplace of the immortal children of God. And the story that is happening today in the Middle East is the tale of two thrones, Satan's ambition and his revolution to place his own on the throne of the Nephilim and of the hybrids and of the abductees and to move forward into the universe. And the throne that God has given the Son of David, who to usher in an era of peace. And I think we are at the verge of the ushering in of that era of peace. And humanity will be transformed. We will get a new body, at least those who belong to him, and we will head towards a new phase of history and eventually in the presence of God. So I think that Earth is very important and is very central. So I do think we are moving forward to a reconciliation of dark and light, where light will shine forward. And but this is a story that we're living. This is not a philosophy. This is why Israel has returned to the land, and that is why we're seeing prophecy fulfilled consistently in the Bible.
All right. Elizabeth, thank you for the call. Let me ask you about the new documentary you're working on, Goliath Rising. What was the impetus for that?
Well, there's so much new information coming from Dr. Jacobs that gives us deeper insight into the details of how this Nephilim reality is emerging. As we said, it's more of a race than just a power structure. They are infiltrating us organically and learning and moving forward. This allows us to study more the passages that talk about the rise of this whole structure and its Antichrist. What's happening in the Middle East is so much has happened since the Arab Spring turned everything upside down, now there's a peace treaty. There's at least a detente, a nuclear detente with Iran, which is, I think, going to be important. There's the rise of Wahhabism in Arabia. There's a lot going on, and it's possible that we may be on the verge of the rise of this Assyrian, this Antichrist. And I wanted to document the new research coming from the researchers as well as the thinkers who are thinking about the world. We've also interviewed Eli Marzulli, and we're going to be interviewing other people who are thinking biblically about the world and about both the spaceships, the hybrids, and what's happening in the Middle East. Biblically, I would like to document the latest thoughts that bring it all together. It's a fascinating story.
And how far are you along in this film? When will it be ready for public consumption?
Well, we're hoping to have it out by the end of 2017. We'll see. We are gathering funds. Support us by going to Thinking in Productions and watching UFOs, Angels, and Gods. We'd love to travel to Israel and film relevant sites and put the whole story together. Support us, and we hope to have it done in 2017.
Ali, thank you so much for this. ThinkAgainProductions.com. I appreciate it. I've enjoyed this.
Thank you. So have I. Bye-bye.
For George Norrie, George Knapp, Lisa Lyons, Stephanie Smith, Tom Danheiser, Dan Galante, Chris Burrows, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasor, Greg Bishop, Nathan Staten, G. Lee, Gina Salvati, and here in Toronto, Nathan Smith, Scotty Guest, and Caroline Podolak, I'm Richard Serrett. Thank you for your voices, your beautiful voices. We'll see you next time.